seriously popular.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Chris, we have reached the end of an era. 8.5 years, 24 games, 81 goals. The final chapter of the Pep Guardiola Jurgen Klopp adventure is about to be written at Anfield on Sunday. And I think we're going to miss this.
Yeah, I think we are. We're just on final chapters. Today is World Book Day.
Correct.
I dropped my daughter, Sophia, off at school. She dressed as Susan from Narnia. We're discussing who I would be on World Book Day if I could be in character. I think someone like Robin Hood would suit me, Nottingham born.
Common thief.
A man of the people. Who would you?
A thief in green tights.
That's very good from you, but you said that twice to give yourself thinking time. Who would you?
Somebody
be?
Shakespearean, because my use of words.
Shakespearean.
My daughter's gone off dressed as a police officer from What the Ladybird Saw.
What?
She wanted to go dressed as somebody from Paw Patrol until we had to tell her about 8 times that Paw Patrol's not a book. It's a TV show. So there we go. Now, nice start to show.
You still haven't answered. Who would
somebody Shakespearean?
Yeah, but that's not good enough.
Romeo? I think that's fair.
How tall was Romeo?
I think there'll be a few people out there who'll say, yeah, that's accurate description.
Not with your accent.
Northern jibe. Okay.
Romeo.
Liverpool versus Manchester City. Nice of you to throw that in, though. I like that. A bit of off the cuff banter, as they call it. Liverpool versus Manchester City. So, like I say to you, 8.5 years, the Klopp Guardiola rivalry comes to what could be a spectacular head at Anfield on Sunday. It feels like a Premier League title shootout. And back to my original question, I think we are going to miss this in the years to come. It's been quite special over the last decade.
Yeah, it has. I think that Manchester City have pretty much dominated anyway over the last 8.5 years since Pep has been in. But without Jurgen Klopp, you know, they would have absolutely wiped the floor with everybody. Two strong characters, two characters who know how to set up a team. And, I mean, it's an enthralling finish, isn't it? With both teams going head-to-head at the weekend. And, whichever team wins, that will give them one hell of a chance of going on to win the Premier League.
It's a really good point that you make about Jurgen Klopp not been around in this last decade, then Pep Guardiola really would have had this everything his own way. The statistics are quite interesting. From the 24 games that they've played, Liverpool have won 10. They won the first one they played at the Etihad in November 2015, about a month after Klopp had taken over. They won the first one 4-1, but they've won 10, City have won 7, and there have been 7 draws. Now, the one thing I just want to say about the rivalry is that, it, you know, when we look back over the course of time, and you always take the mickey out of me saying that I'm Premier League centric. I don't think I am, but I'll add more fuel to your fire here by keeping it to the parameters to the Premier League. I think if you look back at the great rivalries, I suppose Ferguson and Wenger, for example, and Ferguson and Mourinho would be another one. I think the Klopp Guardiola relationship has been different because it's never been ugly off the field. It's in a way it's been, as far as we know. Yeah, as far as we know, it's been quite beautiful on the field. The football that both teams play is different, but mesmerizing equally. The football's been beautiful. The fact that Klopp has managed to leave Guardiola almost kind of bemused at times with that kind of heavy metal football that he plays, and then City have had their revenge at time. They've never resorted to what you call shithousing. There's never been the ugly stuff in press conferences. Off the top of my head, I can't remember anything particularly nasty on the touchline. The night that Liverpool won the Champions League in Madrid, when they beat Tottenham, Guardiola called Klopp that night before he'd even done the press conference to congratulate him. So I do think that there's been something wholesome about that relationship as well.
Yeah, that's the way I think that we want it, isn't it? Where there is this, you know, really healthy respect between two top managers over the years. I mean, from your point of view as a journalist, I suspect that you prefer all the needle and when managers go at each other. But it tells us a lot about both managers and their deep found respect for the other guy.
Yeah, I think as a journalist, you're quite right. From a professional point of view, we like a bit of needle. We like the odd spicy quote, the odd argument. Of course we do. But as a human being and a football fan, I actually have loved it the way it's been. They're not in love with each other, these guys. They've got their differences. They're very different people. They're different coaches. But they've managed on the whole to keep the rivalry in perspective, I think. Which I've always liked, but I tell you what, I do wonder one day Jurgen Klopp, when his career's over, whatever he does next, when his career's over and he's sitting in his armchair or he's having a walk somewhere and he's thinking back to this period of his life, he might just, if they don't win the title this year, and we'll get that to that in a minute, he might just look back one day and think, blimey, everything that I did at Liverpool, all that fabulous football, all that energy, all that cleverness, all that inventiveness, and all I got from it was one Premier League. And that would be because of Pep Guardiola.
Oh, come on. He will not look at it like that.
You know what
that.
I mean, though? The points tallies that they've put together, and he's got one league because of Guardiola.
He's also got a Champions League. He's also it's about what he's built, isn't it? And, you know, you, I mean, you started this off talking about, you know, it's going to be the end of an era now, and his place in Premier League history is, you know, it's going to be there for, you know, forever, and what he's achieved, and also it's not just about the one Premier League. It was about Liverpool, a team who were serial winners for years, dominated English football, who had lost the way in terms of winning league titles and bringing the glory days back. So there's all that. And I know which side of the fence he will, not that I know Jurgen Klopp particularly well, but I know which side of the fence he will be on when he looks back. And I don't think there'll be, you know, any real negativity. I think that, you know, we talk about the healthy respect there is. I think that he respects Manchester City as a team and Pep Guardiola. He would have liked more trophies, but he can still look back and think, blimey, you know, what an era.
Now, very, very quickly, do you think that Liverpool can get them on the counter? Marcus Rashford, playing for Manchester United on Sunday, got away two or three times as United caught City. Can't Liverpool have pace, obviously, Darling Darwin, other players, quick movement of the ball. City will come onto them at Anfield without a doubt. Can Liverpool get them on the counter? Is that one of the, not a weakness, but is that something that Liverpool will try and play on?
Now, all this, I don't think that Liverpool will, in fact, I'm 100% certain, Liverpool aren't just going to play counter-attack. You know, the way City like to, we know the way that City like to dominate the ball, that, you know, they'll play out from the back and it's high-risk football. They leave themselves vulnerable to counter-attack. But they do have Kyle Walker, which is a sort of an added bonus. But we know that Liverpool can hurt them and, you know, they can be absolutely devastating. I do think Salah being fit is a big deal for Liverpool. Liverpool have been finding a way to win games remarkably. Sort of the squad has been stretched and a lot made about the young kids. But this is a level up. I mean, this is a match defining game, isn't it, this season? And whoever wins will probably be a draw. But if whoever wins, that will really give them a confidence boost going into the run-in.
You mentioned Kyle Walker there. We spoke about Kyle Walker in Monday's podcast, but it was edited out. So I just want to say it again. Kyle Walker, my player of the season, not just for Manchester City in the Premier League, my player of the season. I want to ask something. I want to ask you something very quickly before we move on and talk about Arsenal versus Brentford. Trent Alexander-Arnold has given an interview to the 442 magazine, just put my glasses on, and he's just said something here that I want you to just give me a couple of lines of comment on. Essentially saying, Trent, looking back on this era, although City have won more titles than us and have been more successful, our trophies mean more to our fan base because of the situations at both clubs financially. How both clubs have built their teams and the manner in which we've done it probably means more to our fans. I'm not having that, but I'm very keen to know what you think.
I think that's a little bit unnecessary, really. A bit of a dig about, City spending. It's not like Liverpool have been paupers.
Exactly.
And not spent anything over the years. We opened the pod talking about the healthy respect between Pep and Jurgen Klopp. I understand the fact that, the trophies which Trent Alexander-Arnold has won mean more to him and the Liverpool team, but that's a pretty obvious thing to say. Of course they do, but, the Manchester City players will flip that and say the complete opposite. So, yeah, just unnecessary as much as anything. It's been a great rivalry. Let's just leave it at that, can't we?
Hold that thought. We'll be back right after this.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Now, it was on September 17th last year that Mikel Arteta said in the press conference room at Goodison Park after a game, I was there, he said that he would be rotating his goalkeepers throughout the Premier League season. He even suggested he'd be substituting goalkeepers on and off during games, depending on circumstances. I thought that was disingenuous at the time. I thought he was just trying to explain away the fact that he dropped Aaron Ramsdale for David Raya. Anyway, since that day, Aaron Ramsdale has played once in the Premier League.
He has rotated them then.
Yeah, and that was against Brentford because David Ray remains on loan from Brentford and is not allowed to play against them. Ramsdale was poor in that game against Brentford, and on Saturday, he's got to do it again. Brentford come to the Emirates to take on high-flying, high-scoring, free-wheeling, excitement-inducing, team-shredding Arsenal. And Ramsdale,
lovely anthem.
Ramsdale will play. How difficult is that going to be for him?
Not difficult at all.
Why?
Not difficult at all. Because it's the game. It's what happens. And I understand the focus from the outside looking in, but the Ramsdale Raya debate is done now. And I've had my own view. I thought Ramsdale was really harshly treated, But essentially, Mikel Arteta has stuck with Raya, and I've got to say, Raya has been outstanding this season for Arsenal. I think that he probably, I'm not saying he probably wouldn't care, but maybe he would regret Mikel Arteta, his choice of words when talking about the rotation. I think that most people then assumed it would be, you know, a couple of games for each or whatever. But, you know, yeah, I mean, what's he judged on, Mikel Arteta? He's judged on winning games. He needs his Arsenal team to win a trophy. They were competitive last season, really competitive, and it's about making that next step. And if he has felt Raya as the number one goalkeeper, of course he has to then pick him. But the focus will be on Ramsdale, no doubt, at the weekend. But, you know, you can look back at the last game against Brentford and talk about, Ramsdale hesitating and making the odd error. He's still a top quality goalkeeper. And it's just the same as any other number two goalkeeper in the Premier League. You have to be ready. And I'm sure he will be. It's not a perfect situation. It hasn't been a perfect situation for him. And I suspect that that maybe next season or, you know, at the end of this season, he'll be looking to move on. That's just the way it is because, you know, he's a number one. He's not playing regularly. You train all week, you train all month, you train all season to when you're given the opportunity, you have to take it. He's not going to be number one again in the near future, but let's just see.
Arteta has been vindicated, as you touched upon there. He's been vindicated in his decision. David Raya had a very difficult first half or maybe first third of the season. And I must admit, I can't remember the last time we spoke about Raya and his vulnerability under crosses and some of his distribution and mistakes. So that speaks volumes. I think Arteta has been vindicated. My only point is that, and I'm keen to just briefly get a player's perspective on this, would it not have been better for Arteta back in September just to be a little bit more transparent, a little bit more honest about his intentions? Because it sounded as though he was trying to pull the wool over people's eyes. And that doesn't matter what he does to the media. That doesn't matter. But will Ramsdale feel that he was having the wool pulled over his own eyes back then? How would you have felt about that?
You know, words do matter, don't they? And, you know, your mob hang on every word that every player and manager, says. So, how would Ramsdale feel? I think had Mikel Arteta just simply said, I'm going to pick the best goalkeeper, that's everybody understands that. And, you know, positionally, every player understands that. You're going to pick the best player for a particular position. And, you know, you're going to be objective and, there is competition that, you know, players push each other. That's just the way it is at football clubs. But if a manager's like that, I don't think you have any argument. And had he come out and said that, then it wouldn't have been a problem. I suspect Ramsdale does or did and maybe still does feel a little bit let down.
Have you been impressed with the way that Declan Rice appears to have been liberated to play a little bit higher up the field by the form of someone like Jorginho and also Thomas Partey's now
liberated
back as well? Yeah, given freedom.
Given freedom.
Free Rice. Going back to the Robin Hood analogy. freed to play further up the field.
The shackles are off Declan. But Arsenal have been playing pretty freely all season. I think the most fascinating thing for everybody looking at Arsenal is, and we were guilty of it, a couple of months back, this whole striker situation. They need... No, honestly. They need someone in, and we all had our opinions on it. I can't remember. I think I've had every different sort of opinion on it, really, because I thought, you know, maybe they did need somebody in. But I tell you, so we're talking about Rice, and we talk about Saka. Do you know who's been so important to them? Kai Havertz. Kai Havertz has been, you know, when he first went there, I think he was really undermined and a lot of negativity towards him. He's proven to be such a key cog in this Arsenal team, and his forward runs, you know, when he's playing as a number eight, always running in behind, and there's that rotation at times. But he's a go-to guy now for Mikel Arteta. And we just talked about the goalkeeping situation with Raya and Ramsdale. And Arteta looks really vindicated in terms of his choice of signing. Everybody talks about Declan Rice, and I totally get that. But Kai Havertz, under the radar, I think the Arsenal fans appreciate what an important player he has been. But he's one where I've really sort of sat up and watched him as of late and thought, blimey, you know, Arsenal can't do without him.
It's a really, really good point. I want to say two things by way of response. The first is that that Havertz's recovery from the struggles of early season tells us a lot about the incredible mental strength that most footballers have. And for when you sit on my side of the fence, it's one of the things that you do marvel at with professional footballers. The confidence and the belief and the ability to bounce back from setbacks, disappointments, criticism always impresses me. And that's a great example. I remember being at the Emirates at the start of the season when Arsenal beat Manchester United, I think, and Havertz essentially had an open goal from 6 yards and missed the ball. They missed the goal, he missed the ball. And you and I spoke afterwards about how he'd looked shot to pieces already so early in his Arsenal career. He's been booed by Arsenal fans because of his Chelsea connections. And here we are, 6 months later, and he's a star member of the team. The other point I'll make, though, about goals, you're right, they're the top scorers in the Premier League, making mugs of people like you and I who said they needed a number nine. However, there was that period at the start of the season, the first half of the season, when they were struggling. If they'd have had that number nine then, you might have dragged them out of a few holes. If we get to the end...
You've always got an answer, haven't you? Even when you're wrong, you always worm your way out with a line.
There's always an alternative view, Christopher. That's all you need to know. Whatever the subject, whoever you're debating it with, there's always an alternative
sometimes,
view.
Sometimes it's good to just say, I was wrong.
Quick question, quick answer required. Is there any recovery for Sheffield United's players? I don't mean in terms of Premier League survival because they're gone. But that half an hour at Bramall Lane on Monday was, by a stretch, the worst Premier League team performance I've seen in doing this job for 23, 24 years. It was extraordinarily bad. Arsenal could have scored 10 had they wished. I'd have scored if I'd have been playing for Arsenal. You certainly would. Afterwards, Chris Wilder, the Sheffield United manager, said that his players are broken. Broken. They're at Bournemouth on Saturday, very, very quickly. How do they recover from that?
Well, they don't.
Do they need a psychologist? Do they just need a couple of days off? Do they need more work on the training ground? Less work on the training ground?
Do they need to go to the pub and get it all out? No, absolutely not. That's what used to happen years ago. You're going to jump in there. You think that's a good thing?
I remember a Neil Warnock ploy for him, and it was actually Sheffield United, as it happens, when he was at Sheffield United manager years ago, and they were down in the doom dock and really, really, really struggling. One of his tactics was to take them all to a nightclub, and they all had to go. They didn't stay out till 2 o'clock in the morning. They were all gone by midnight. He took them all to a nightclub.
They were out at 1:30 to have a kebab.
Because his view was, you've got to get the minds off this. Now, I know that's a bit old school. It's not going to happen now, but it's a train of thought. Sam Allardyce went into Leeds at the end of last season. First thing he did was give the players 2 days off. He said they need a release of mental pressure. Sometimes you can work footballers too hard. It's just a thought.
Oh, blimey. We haven't got long enough to discuss Sheffield United. They were shite before a ball was kicked. They sold the best couple of players. They had a terrible start to the season. They shouldn't have come up. And you know, there is this age-old debate about club supporters, and they would rather watch their team play in the Championship than the Premier League. That sounds ridiculous. I'm not sure I'm into that myself, but I do understand it. You look at this season, Sheffield United and Burnley, they have been totally humiliated in the Premier League. They have been miles off it. They haven't been good enough. And now you have Chris Wilder coming out, and there's double-figure games to go. Think about that. Think about that. Both those teams are relegated and saying that the players are broken. How do they go again next season in the Championship? That has to be the biggest concern for Sheffield United and Chris Wilder. If he's still there, how does he pick himself up and the players up to go again and be competitive?
A word about the Sheffield United supporters. Some of them left after 10 minutes on Monday.
Not supporters.
More of them left after 20
not
minutes.
Not real supporters.
When they were four down, I think. I haven't got a problem with that. We've had that debate before. But what I will say is at the end, when they'd lost 6-0 and the Sheffield United players did a little walk around, we won't call it a lap of honour, but a little walk around the perimeter of the field, the Sheffield United supporters that were still there applauded their players off the field because they recognised there had been an increased effort, increased application in the second half. Young players have been thrown on. Football supporters are extraordinary at times. Seriously. Football supporters are extraordinary.
That's what being a supporter is about. Did you say they did a walk around the perimeter at the end?
I think they just wanted to say thanks to the supporters who had stayed.
Yeah, but that whole aspect, I said before, I can't stand that.
No, I liked
aspect.
It. I liked it.
Right. What was the game? I've got to just say, what was the game in the Bundesliga where they had an ultra? Who was it this last week? They lost 6-0. Did you see the clip?
But that's happening all the time now. Supporters meet the team, etc.
But that's absolutely ridiculous. What on earth is the game coming to where you have some fan coming on and dressing the players down? Where has that come from? Why has that actually happened? There is no, I'm telling you now, there is no way as a player I would stand there and listen to some twit come onto the pitch and start telling me what I should and shouldn't be doing. If I lost 6-0, do you know what? I'd have a good idea that I'd been crap, and I wouldn't need someone coming from the terraces to tell me that and how I'd let people down. I'd know that. I just want to get off the pitch and think about things myself. Dear me, what's going on?
You'd have been off hiding in the bog like you were when Martin Keown came after you. So would you not stand there and take that? Would you turn your back and walk off the pitch?
No, I wouldn't.
Would you?
Yes.
Would you?
Well, I don't see why. I think you know, we're in this era of public humiliation for players. You know, I'm always in the middle with these things. I don't understand about the huge wild celebrations at times when teams win. And I think that you set yourself up in a way when you do have the wild celebrations. But then, you know, you have the opposite effect, which, you know, we saw in the Bundesliga. Where are we going with this?
If you were the player who turned and walked away, you'd then be a target for those ulcers. I don't mean a physical target.
You'd then be
setting yourself up to be a hate figure amongst your own supporters. You'd have to stand there and take it. I put it to you that you wouldn't walk away. You'd have to stand and take it.
No, but they all stood there like they were. They all stood there like they were shitting themselves. The players. Why on earth? It's not that you don't respect the fans. Of course you do. But where has this come from? Here's one for you, right? I'm telling you now, right? Do you think Alan Shearer would have stood there? Do you think Henrik Larsson would have stood there? Paul Lambert, Neil Lennon, strong characters.
Yes.
I'm not knocking. They would not have stood there and took that. We would all have come to a decision. We're not going to stand there and put up with that nonsense.
But that's different. If you all decided you weren't doing it, what I'm saying is, if the team are doing it, you couldn't walk off as an individual. Very quickly, I keep saying this. Very quickly, Super Sunday. Normally, you would expect Super Sunday traditionally to be Liverpool and Arsenal and Chelsea and Manchester City. This Sunday, the other two teams who make up Super Sunday, Aston Villa and Spurs. Shows the way things have changed. Villa hosts Spurs at Villa Park on Sunday. It looks as though we might get five Champions League places, but for the sake of, so they might both qualify.
It's a bit arrogant.
But for the sake, I said might, but for this, the coefficient is heading, is beginning to trend our way. But let's just suggest for a minute that they are going for that fourth place. It is a bit of a battle. That could be a heck of a game. Two open teams, attacking teams in form. Postecoglou takes his high offside line to Villa Park. Ollie Watkins will be licking his chops.
Yeah, can't wait for the game. Okay. Was it Villa beat them, didn't they? Fortunately,
yeah. Outplayed for a large percentage of the game
When Tottenham are at home. Impossible to call. I can't wait. Game of basketball. Ange Postecoglou, manager of the year, wasn't he? And voted in London. I know that. I keep saying that. Don't be like that. I know that really enrages Henry, our producer, and Ben.
Jobless Ben.
They get really angry about that. But, you know, he's made a big impact, hasn't he? And it's about finishing the season strongly. And Unai Emery, I mean, two very similar teams. You know, he's done a phenomenal job. It's about finishing the season off. So I can't wait for that one. Impossible to call.
By the way, that beautiful first touch that Ollie Watkins applied to that free kick over the top against Luton last Saturday. Beautiful first touch, and then caressed it with his right foot into the far corner. That had carried all the hallmarks of a confident player who's getting better. I think we finally, and just in time, have an understudy for Harry Kane. Going into the Euros. Pray to God that Ollie Watkins keeps that form going, because he's dynamite at the moment.
Agreed.
Quickly, two things before we finish. Our Spotify poll that we started on Monday asked a very, very simple question, which was a better goal in the Manchester derby at the weekend, Marcus Rashford or Phil Foden? Currently, Rashford is ahead, 67% of the vote he has for his thunderclap goal after 8 minutes in that what turned out to be a 3-1 defeat. That poll is still running on Spotify. Go to the episode, you'll find it in the show notes underneath, and leave your vote. Now, I want to ask you to judge on something, Chris, before we finish. Let's have a prediction on who's going to win the Premier League. I've had a look, and I asked you to do the same, at Liverpool's fixtures, City's fixtures, Arsenal's fixtures.
Did you look scientifically, like I did?
Arsenal's fixtures, Man City's fixtures, Liverpool's fixtures, between now and the end of the season, work out which they'll win, which they won't, how many points. So my totals, I have in third place Arsenal with 87 points. Second place, valiant runners-up once again to Manchester City's threshing machine, Liverpool, 89 points. Champions, yet again, Manchester City, 91 points. What about you?
Yeah, can we do it after the weekend, this, and then we'll have a sort of better...
do it after the season.
So did you, and this is, I'm trying to help you here, did you take the reverse fixtures into account? If I told you how many points would they have got from the reverse fixtures against the teams which they are playing?
Don't even know what that means.
So the teams they have left, you fool. Okay, they've played them once this season already.
If you applied those fixtures, that doesn't make any sense.
Yes,
but no, I didn't do that.
But if you put it into a supercomputer, these are things that you have to take into account. So how many points in the reverse fixtures do you think Liverpool would have had?
Chris, there were so many holes in that philosophy.
No, I just want you to have a guess. Right. I want you to have a guess, because you're an educated guy. Don't look down.
I'm trying to work out what you want me to do.
You're looking down now, trying to do your maths. Come on.
So what? Ask me the question again.
Short and sharp.
Ask me the question.
How many points do you think they would have got in their remaining, what is it, remaining 11 fixtures, is it?
Okay, Liverpool. Yes. I'm just 25.
24, good guess. What about Manchester City?
Well, they're coming strong in this half of the season, so 20.
Yeah, but what
20,
do you think they
so,
got?
So if, 23.
They got 18 points.
Okay.
So there's one for you. Register that. Wow.
Right, so hang on a minute. So we've got...
Didn't do well.
So
we've got, and Arsenal.
Oh,
and Arsenal.
Arsenal be awful,
what do you think?
About 15 points.
No, in the corresponding fixtures, they got 26 points. You're wrong.
So who wins the league? Who wins the league?
I've got Liverpool winning the league... I've got two different theories which I've put into my super computer scientific.
Chris, I'm losing the
computer.
Will to live
I've got Liverpool winning it.
How many points
on goal difference against Arsenal on one of my
How many
on
points?
One of my predictions, and the other one, but Liverpool by 2 points from Manchester City.
Do you know, like, sometimes when you have, like, a conversation at home and you just wish you hadn't gone there, you wish you hadn't started it because it escalates into an argument or something. I just wish I hadn't thought of this. It was such a simple concept. Such a simple concept.
I scratched beneath the surface, went into a bit of detail.
You've just ruined my game. You've just ruined my game. You've ruined it.
Liverpool-Arsenal. Right. Liverpool-Arsenal, City third on goal difference. Who's going to win it, Liverpool or Arsenal?
I'm lost. I think I'm done with this. But I'm done with this for today. I was really enjoying myself until 5 minutes ago, and you've ruined it. Anyway,
I've got another theory.
God, he's still talking. Still talking. Can you stop now? You must have been so annoying in the dressing room, but shut up and put your boots on. Right, thanks, everybody. I've muted Chris. He's driving me to distraction. Thanks for being with us. I hope you enjoyed it. Remember, go to Spotify and vote in our poll. Equally, whether you're, if you're an Apple's podcast listener, remember to subscribe. It's really
Apple.
It's really, really important. We will be back again on Monday for the next edition of It's All Kicking Off, and we'll see you then. God almighty.
Do you know what? Do you know what? That's shit from you. I spent ages doing that yesterday.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.